This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Dave Brown, and this is a podcast version of AMI's Morning Show, now with Dave Brown. Catch the live broadcasts weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI, Friday edition of the show, which means we wrap up the broadcast week by catching up with Karen McKay from the Center for Equitable Library Access. Hey, good morning, Karen.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm well, and I'm beyond excited to hear about a huge milestone that you and your colleagues hit. Tell us about the milestone in your collection of books.
Yeah, we are super excited about this. So just this week, we passed the 1 million bookmark in our collection, meaning we have 1 million titles, more than that now, actually.
Phenomenal.
In our collection. Yeah, which is really, it's such a huge number. And we are thrilled. When I started with CLA, we had about 75,000 in our collection. And then we had another about 225 from Bookshare, 225,000. And so we've added 700,000 titles in the last 6 years.
That is phenomenal. Top notch. Okay, Karen, just in case the people from Trivial Pursuit are listening, what was the book that pushed you to the million mark?
So we have two that pushed us over because we calculate in French and English. So the first one is George Eliot Clark, who wrote Where Beauty Survived, which is an Africadian memoir about growing up in Halifax, Nova Scotia. And the French title is by Serge Forest, who wrote I'm going to say that wrong. It's been years since I took French, which is a mystery about a fishing family on the East Coast. So they're both East Coast books. But yeah, we were thrilled to see that they're both Canadian that came in. That was awesome.
Here's where I follow up with sort of another trivia question in regards to a factoid. Do you have a sense of what the percentage of published works available in accessible formats?
We do. So the industry numbers are about 5 to 7%. That's where we think we're sitting right now. But over the last few years, there's been, as you know, a really growing awareness for the need for accessible material. Mm-hmm. So I suspect that we're edging closer to about 10% now. It's still kind of a dismal number in that context, but you know, at least it's moving in the right direction.
And while we're talking about milestones and big moments, CELA and the National Network for Equitable Library Services were recently honored with a special honor from the Book Publishers Association of Alberta. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, we got this really lovely award. It's called the Special Achievement in Publishing for making Canadian content available to Canadians with print disabilities. And it was really lovely to share this with our colleagues at NELS. There was a beautiful presentation, virtual as they are now, from the Book Publishers Association in Alberta. And the BPAA is one of the first publishing groups I remember working with when I first came onto CELA. And they've been a real leader in both the publishing aspect, but also in terms of standing alongside us, recognizing the need for accessible reading landscape, and really supporting us in our advocacy efforts, especially around funding discussions with the federal government. So to have this organization, which is so forward-thinking, recognize us, we were just so honored with that.
Of course, you weren't the only people to receive a special honor this week. Earlier in the week, the winner of the Shaughnessy Cohen Prize for Political Literature was announced. So who won the award and for what book?
So Ronald Zebert won the award, and he won it for a book based on his Massey lectures about civil society. So the book's called Reset, Reclaiming the Internet for Civil Society.
Tell us a bit more about Robert, the person who won.
So he's an interesting fellow. I bet you he'd be really cool to sit beside at a dinner party. So he was the founder and the director of Citizen Lab, which is a research-based center out of the U of T, and it studies the intersection of technology, surveillance, and censorship. So, you know, you probably have to put your tinfoil hat on for some of the conversations you have with him, but I bet you it's really interesting.
way back in the day, we interviewed somebody from that lab on The Pulse, Lex Gill, in regards to some surveillance that goes on through digital tracking. Fascinating work they do there at the Citizen Lab. Hey, Karen, let's jump ahead to the featured selections. Every week you bring us a lot of thoughtful writing and literature that has to deal with important events. Well, next Thursday is going to mark the first ever National Day for Truth and Reconciliation, as well as Orange Shirt Day. And you wanted to explore a couple of pieces of literature that offered some perspective on the legacy of residential schools. And you wanted to begin with The Orange Shirt Story by Phyllis Webstead.
Yeah, so this book really, I think, is one of those pivotal pieces of literature that has turned a culture. And so Phyllis Wudstadt was, she was a residential school survivor, and she was chatting with a friend. She was about to do a speech at the school where she had been a student, and she didn't know what she was going to talk about. And in the course of this conversation with her friend, they came across, she brought up the story of when she was a young child, her grandmother had given her an orange shirt to wear at the first day of school, and she got to the residential school and it was taken away from her, and she was never allowed to see it again. And that loss was profound for her, but also really, it was really sort of an emblematic of the whole situation with residential schools. And so she wrote a children's book, which is what the orange shirt story is. And that book is one that's used in schools across the country to talk about the impact of residential schools. It's one of the reasons I think that our kids in general are more educated about this topic than many of the adults that we know. Mm-hmm. And so it's a really beautiful story. She's actually written a couple of versions. There's a version for younger kids as well, which is a little less intimidating to delve into. And then there's the orange shirt story, which is actually new to our collection. We were just able to get our hands on it just a few weeks ago, actually. Mm-hmm. And we're thrilled to add it. And then she has other books coming out, which we will work to get into our collection. It's really a phenomenal story. And it's one, I think, you know, it's for kids, but I think adults can really learn a lot about the impact of schools, residential schools, on the Indigenous communities.
Yeah, agreed. It was something that was sorely lacking during my high school and elementary school education when we were talking about the relationship and reconciliation with Indigenous people. You also wanted to highlight Unreconciled, Family Truth and Indigenous Resistance by Jesse Wente.
Yeah, so this is brand new to our collection. It was just released earlier this week. I think it was released on Monday, actually. And it was a highly anticipated book. One of the reasons I wanted to bring it is because I think that it brings a really nuanced perspective to this very important conversation. So Wendy, as you know, is a broadcaster and a journalist. He's a film critic, and he's currently the chair of the Canadian Council for the Arts. So he brings all of those perspectives into his writing. He's Ojibwe from Serpent River. And this book is part memoir. So we learn about his childhood. He was the son of an American father and an Anishinaabe mother. And he grew up in Toronto. And he had lots of visits to his relatives who lived on the reserves. And he talks about his grandmother's experience in residential school and his own experiences with racial profiling, etc. But the book's also part manifesto, and it's really a call to build a new sort of respectful relationship between the Nation of Canada and the Indigenous people. And he tackles this subject in a way that I think is really interesting. So it's through the lens of art and pop culture, also personal stories. He's actually quite funny throughout this. He provides what I call sort of on-ramps to understanding. So he links his love of baseball and movies to issues around things like cultural appropriation, Indigenous representation and identity. And he sort of argues that storytelling in all its forms is one of Indigenous people's best weapons to reclaim their sort of rightful place. But what I think really is important about this book is that he not only talks about the whole idea of reconciliation, but he talks about the fact that we never really were reconciled nations to begin with. So returning to that, you know, to reconcile suggests return to a relationship that never really exists. It's a very nuanced book, which I think is really important. It weaves these really tough moments of conversation with humor, but also with joy. And I think that that's really important because with this story, with this topic, I think we can kind of get stuck in the sort of the idea of a single story. And we want to understand First Nations communities, Indigenous communities, with a fuller picture, right? We want to give them we want to give ourselves the fuller understanding mm-hmm. of First Nations communities. And I think that this book helps us do that, all while dealing with very difficult topics.
Karen, we've only got about 90 seconds left here, but I do want to hear about A National Crime, the Canadian Government and the Residential School System by John S. Molloy.
Okay, so I want to be really clear that this book presents sort of a one-sided approach to the content. It lacks Aboriginal voices, and I don't think that it delves really deeply into ethical questions. But if readers want to know what the heck the government was thinking, what they knew when, and when they did or what they did or didn't do about it, this book lays it out it's written by a historian. He goes through all of the Department of Indian Affairs documents, lots of correspondence, lots of letters, and he draws the timeline from the inception of residential schools right through until, 20 years ago. It was written 20 years ago and was updated 10 years ago. So I think it's an important book to be read as part of a personal study about Indigenous issues. But I think it sheds an important light on what the government was thinking. But it really needs to be supplemented with Aboriginal first-person stories.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I just want to make quick mention of a couple other titles that you've identified for us here, which is Calling Down the Sky by Rosanna Deerchild, which is a poetry collection, as well as The Red Files by Lisa Bird Wilson, another poetry collection as well. Hey, Karen, thank you for highlighting these really important works for us today. Thank you for all the work you and your colleagues are doing, and we'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
Thank you so much.
That's Karen McKay, Communications Manager for the Center for Equitable Library Access. You can follow CELA on Twitter at CELA Library, C-E-L-A Library. C-E-L-A Library is where you find them on Twitter. You've been listening to Now with Dave Brown. Hit the subscribe button on any podcast platform and leave us a rating and a review.